You know, I believe that many of us in this room have perhaps had a specific time in our lives when we realized that something was far more than we had anticipated it as being or that we thought it was. When things like that happen, two things. One, it tends to humble us because suddenly we realize just what has happened or what we have encountered. And the second thing that happens is sometimes it can be frightening. If you suddenly realize what has just happened in your life, it can be a very frightening thing. Years ago, when I was in college, I had a commercial driver's license at the time, and there would be a bus parked on campus. There were several buses, and those buses would take students to different congregations in Nashville for worship. And one of the buses was for the Woodson Chapel Church of Christ. And when they found out that I had a license to drive that, they asked me if I would. And so I began transporting students back and forth because I was attending there. And one Sunday morning on the way back with a group of students coming over I-65 before they did all the widening that they had done to turn right on Franklin Road to go back to Lipscomb, you had to get into the right turn lane. And it was also the lane that the traffic coming off the interstate would merge onto. Well, I put on my turn signal, I glanced, checked my mirrors, glanced over my shoulder, made sure everything was okay, pressed the brake to begin slowing down to make the turn, and the pedal went to the floor. On a bus. There was a police car directly in front of me at the light. And I had only one option, or I had some options. One was to rear end him. The other was to try to go around him and go through the light, even though the light was red at the time. That was the option I chose. Fortunately for me, there was nobody coming except for one service truck, and he saw what was happening, and he stopped. And I just did skim the front of his truck and was able to get the bus. God was able to stop the bus for me in the parking lot of a little convenience store that was there at the gas pumps that morning. The officer waited for the light to change, which I never did understand. I thought, well, why don't you just turn on your lights and come right on through? But he came up and he got out of the car and he said, I saw you coming up behind me. He said, you did a good job getting that bus stopped. It was at that point that I literally just melted. It hit me what had just happened and what I had just been through, because they said the last thing the kids said I said to him was, hang on. Folks, you realize suddenly what's just happened. Well, there is such a situation far more than anything I've ever encountered, and maybe more than anything you have ever encountered, that we have happening here in what was read for us just a moment ago by Hunter. Because the experience by Jesus' disciples in a boat with him on the Sea of Galilee is something they would never forget. Matthew, Mark, and Luke record it for us. Matthew's account is in Matthew chapter 8, there as you've got on your outline, verses 18, and then picks up again in 23 through 27. Mark has it in what was read for us just a moment ago in chapter 4, right at the end of that chapter, verses 35 through 41. Luke has it for us in chapter 8 of his gospel, beginning in verse 22 and going through verse 25. But had we been a part of that privileged group that were traveling with him that day, we might have responded just as they did, in fear. Fear for our lives and fear for everything that had just happened around us. And it prompted them to ask a question. And the question is, and it's the one that I want us to consider this morning, is who is this man? Who is this individual that even the wind and the waves obey his will? Well, to get a better grasp of what has just happened and maybe even to ask ourselves some questions about our lives and things that we encounter in lives is to go back and look at what happened on that day. You see, it had been a long day for Jesus. It started out that morning with the blasphemous accusations by the Pharisees that Jesus was casting out demons by the power of Beelzebub. It went from that to a crowded room in a house and his own family coming to take him away because they thought he was beside himself. He left the crowded house and he goes back down to the seashore and is teaching the crowds that have come to him in parables. parables that he has to explain to his own disciples, a parable of a sower. And eventually, because of the size of the crowd, he gets into a boat, sits down in the hot Galilean sun, and begins to teach. Finally, as the evening draws near, he's tired. He needs to get away. And he says to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." And so they get in the boat that he's already in, and they began the trek across the Sea of Galilee. Something that you need to know about the Sea of Galilee is that it is unique because of things that tend to happen on it. It sits 628 feet below the level of the sea, below sea level. It is about 13 miles long. It is about, at its widest point, some 7 miles across. And Jesus was traveling from Capernaum across to the Gadarenes, the area of Gadara. The sea is surrounded by mountains with ravines. And oftentimes, wind will come down those ravines, especially out of the southwest. And when it hits the Sea of Galilee, it will stir up the water and it can create havoc for anyone that is on that body of water in a vessel at that time. So it is known for its sudden, unpredictable, violent storms. And that's exactly what happened that evening. The disciples are in a boat and they are moving across along with some other boats. And Mark is the only one that tells us about this, that there are some other boats with them. And they are making their way across when suddenly one of these storms comes up. The New International Version translates the word as a squall, a windstorm. Matthew uses another word. He uses the word seismos. You ever heard of a seismograph that is used to record the intensity of earthquakes? Literally what Matthew is saying is as if somebody just took the whole thing and shook it. You ever taken a bowl of water and just shook it around to see what the water does in it? He says that's literally what happens. It is a violent movement, a shaking. And it is so bad that, as Mark tells us, the waves began to fill the boat. It begins filling up. Luke says it's being swamped. You ever been in a boat when it's sinking? I have. Right out here on the Tennessee River. Water came in and finally it just starts under. It's not a good experience, by the way. My question for you is this. Did Jesus know that they were going to encounter that storm that day before they headed out to cross the Sea of Galilee? Did he know that that was going to happen? I think he did. I believe he did. Because later in John 21, verse 17, when Jesus is asking Peter if he still loves him, and Peter makes the statement, "Lord, you know all things." Well, if our Lord knows all things, then He knew what was coming. He knew what lay ahead for them. He knew they were going to encounter this storm. And yet He was so tired that He crawls into the boat and lays down in the back. He's already in the boat. He lays down in the back and He begins to go to sleep. And as this storm comes upon them, it is swamping the boat. Why did Jesus let them go into a storm? Have you ever thought to ask that question? If He knew it was coming, why? Why didn't He say, "Let's wait a little while, then we'll cross. Let's go somewhere else"? Why did He decide to cross? Because sometimes we need storms in our lives. We don't like them. We don't look for them. We don't ask for them. But there are times that we need storms in our lives because of what the storms for us as Christians do in our lives. Number one, they strengthen our faith. They cause our faith to be tested. In 1 Peter chapter 1, there in verses 6 and 7, One of the things that Peter says is this. He says, in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials. He says, you've been distressed. You as Christians have been distressed by various trials. You've had some storms in your life. And he tells us about those storms. He says, so that the proof of your faith may prove, or being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. He says, it is there to test your faith. There are times when our faith needs to be tested. And the reason that our faith needs to be tested, and the reason that there are storms in our lives, is because that is the only way that we become stronger spiritually. It's true in the physical realm, is it not? Men? If you keep lifting 5 pounds all of your life, you're never going to get beyond that. But if you start lifting 15 pounds, and then 30 pounds, and then 40 pounds, and before you know it, you're putting 100 pounds over your head. Why? Because you have tested your physical body by giving it more to do. Storms in our lives make us grow spiritually mature. And that's exactly what James says in James chapter 1. There in verse 2, he says, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And then he adds to that, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. You see, the storms in our lives, God allows. He knows we're going to go through them, but He allows them. He allows them for a reason. It's because they teach us more about God, and they increase our faith, and they give us power in His power in our lives. Folks, without difficulties, without trials, without stresses and even failures in our lives, we would never grow to become what we need to be. We would never grow to become what we need to be. When have you grown the most in your life, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? Has it not been when there have been trials and tests and stressors in your life? Has it not been when you've gone through physical distress, emotional and mental challenges, that you really have grown and become more than you were before? You see, storms are a part of the process of spiritual growth. And without adversity in our lives, our tendency would be to remain self-centered and proud and empty people. And that's not what God needs. And it's not what God can use in His kingdom. He needs strong people. He needs people who are dependent upon Him, but people who can weather the storms of life and keep pressing on. So I think there was a purpose for that storm being there that day. It was to strengthen these disciples in some things they needed to grow in. But what is Jesus doing? Mark tells us there in verse 38 that Jesus Himself is asleep in the stern on a cushion. Which brings another question to mind. Because I'm sure it's a question that they themselves were wondering. Was Jesus unconcerned about the plight of His disciples in the midst of the storm? Did Jesus just not care that this is going on around them? And if He did care, you know this is going through their minds. If He did care, why doesn't He wake up? Why isn't He alert? Why is He paying attention to what's going on with us? Because what are the disciples doing? They're trying to row. They're probably bailing water. They're doing everything they know to do. And there are 4 experienced fishermen in that boat, men who have sailed this lake all of their lives, and they're probably telling others what to do. Too often in our own storms in life, we mistakenly come to the wrong conclusions. When we have things happen in our lives, when we have our trials and our distresses and our difficulties, we begin to think, I'm alone. Nobody else knows what's going on. Nobody else is here for me. Nobody else is with me. We even begin to think that even God doesn't know what's happening in my life right now. Because if he did, certainly he would act and do more than what he's done. God doesn't even seem to know how I'm feeling right now with what's going on in my life. Because if God knew what I'm struggling with right now, then God would act and God would do something. But I'm here this morning to tell you that that's not the case. God knows everything that's going on in your life, everything that happened, everything that's happening right now, and everything that's going to happen. If you don't believe me, look at what David says in Psalm 139. Beginning in verse 1, David says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You understand my thought from afar. You scrutinize my path and my lying down, and you're intimately acquainted with all my ways. And then I know that's not up here before you, but he says, even before there's a word on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all. You have enclosed me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too high. I cannot attain it. Folks, God knows your heart rate even as you're sitting here right now listening to me. He knows the stressors that you're feeling in your life right now. He knows the concerns that you have. He knows the worries and the anxieties. There is nothing about your life that God does not know and does not care about. And Jesus knew the same. No, it wasn't that he didn't care. It wasn't that he was aloof to their plight. There's something else going on here. And they go to him. And they ask him, Master, do you not care that we're perishing? Do you not care that this boat is taking on water? Do you not care that we're in the middle of this sea and then we're going to be drowned? Do you not care? Of course he cares. Of course he cares. You know, we sing a song that asks that very question. Does Jesus care? And the answer to that is yes. He cares. And Jesus cared on that day because, as we are told, he got up and he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, Hush, be still. Or as the King James says, Peace, be still. He literally told it to be muzzled. He told it to stop. And you know what it did? It did exactly what he told it to do. It stopped. Why? Because if you or I had been on that lake and we had said stop, it certainly would not have stopped. It would have kept just throwing up its waves. It would have kept doing everything it had been doing. The reason it stopped is because of who told it to stop. And I'm sure these disciples would eventually go back to their scriptures and they would see some things that would remind them and cause them to recognize who it was that spoke that day. Because if you go back and you look at Psalm 65, and there in verse 5, and then pick up again in verse 7, you find these words, By awesome deeds you answer us in righteousness, O God of our salvation. And then verse 7, he says, Who stills the roaring seas, the roaring of their waves, and the tumults of the peoples. Who stills the roaring seas? It's God. Or Psalm 89, verse 9. You rule the swelling of the sea. When its waves rise, you still them. Or let me take you to another psalm. Psalm 107. And here you find these words that say almost the same thing. Those who go down to the sea in ships, verse 23 of Psalm 107. who do business on great waters. They have seen the works of the Lord and His wonders in the deep. For He spoke and raised up a stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. When they rose up to the heavens, they went down to the depths. Their soul melted away in their misery. They reeled and staggered like a drunken man and were at their wits' end. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He brought them out of their distresses. He caused the storm to be still, so that the waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad because they were quiet, and He guided them to their desired haven. Folks, that's a psalm about God. Every one of these psalms is about the power of God. And here is one who tells the sea to be quiet and the wind to cease. And it obeys Him. It obeys Him because He created it in the first place. It had no other choice but to obey Him. And the disciples asked the question that should linger in our minds. And that question is this: who is this? Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey Him? Which makes me think about something. When they asked Jesus if He cared, when they asked Jesus if He cared if they were perishing and they wanted Him to do something, I don't believe they expected Him to stand up and to tell it to stop. I believe that what they thought He was going to do is start bailing with them or maybe start praying to God because of their response to what He did. They didn't expect Him to stop it, to simply speak three words and it be no more. Who is this man? He's our Creator. You exist today because of Him. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 16, Paul makes that point. Paul says, by Him all things were created. He said, both in the heavens and on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through Him and for Him. He's not just our Creator, He is our sustainer. We continue to exist because of His constant care in our lives. Because in the very next verse, Colossians chapter 1, verse 17, listen to what Paul goes on to say. He is before all things, and in Him all things hold together. The minutest particles in our creation are held together by an invisible force. And it's the Son of God. He is our Savior. As Jesus Himself said on His way to see Nicodemus, the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. After calming the storm, Jesus asked His disciples, why are you afraid? How is it that you have no faith? Folks, they didn't realize who was there in the boat with them that day. They didn't realize the power that was His to command, to tell the wind and the waves to stop, and that it would happen. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, the writer says that without faith, it's impossible to please Him. That is God. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, that is, that He exists, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. There's another passage that I love. It's found in Ephesians chapter 3, there in verse 20. It's directed to those of us who are Christians. And in it, Paul says, to Him who is able to do exceeding abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. That's a mouthful, but if you stop and you take it all and break it down, what Paul is saying is that God who works within us is able to do far beyond anything that you can think or imagine. Well, I don't think the disciples imagined that the storm would just suddenly stop that day and that the wind would become perfectly calm. but they saw it happen with their own eyes. And I can promise you they never forgot it. And neither should we. No, we weren't there that day. We have their words. We have their eyewitness. But the question for us today is this: do you believe in Him? Do you believe in Him who is able to feed the hungry and heal the sick? Do you believe in Him who is able to raise the dead and still the storms? Do you believe that He is able to help you out in your darkest hour? That He is able to see you through the storms in your life? That He and He alone is able to save your soul and to make you whole again? Do you believe that He is who He calls Himself? The Son of Man, the Son of God, the Messiah, our Savior and our Lord. And if you believe these things, are you willing to seek Him? Because if you don't seek Him, you have missed out on the greatest opportunity that has ever been afforded you in your lifetime. You're walking away from the greatest gift that could ever be given by the God of heaven. My plea to you today is, don't walk away from that. Don't leave this building without giving your life in obedient faith to the Son of God, confessing Him before this body of Christians, repenting of sin, and being buried with Him in baptism. If you need to respond, please, will you not come as together we stand and sing?